And so I have a lot of background in recruiting and hiring people. And I think that this is a huge struggle in our profession, finding the right people to do the jobs in veterinary practices. And so today I'm going to start off talking about how do we find those great people to work in our practices to represent the veterinarians and our hospital's vision. So I'm going to give you guys some tidbits. I wish I could come here and just give you, you know, the magic potion to be able to find, you know, excellent people every single time. It's just not a reality. I think it's a struggle no matter what industry you work in. But hopefully I'll be able to give you some tips on how to develop your recruiting process so that you don't make the mistakes that I perhaps have made in the past and maybe you have made in the past as well. I hope you stay with me throughout the day. This session we're going to just talk about how to recruit, how to go about finding the people, going through the interview process and screening those candidates. And then in the second session, I'm going to talk about orientation. Once you get them hired, then what do? And we're going to have to go through some of the steps of how to get them orientated into your practice. And then the third session, I'm going to talk about training. How do we train these new people, and how do we do ongoing training with existing healthcare team members? And then the next session, I'm going to talk about are we losing our people? Just as soon as we get them hired and trained, do they leave? And then what do? Do you have turnover in your practice? Why do you have turnover? What causes turnover in practices? So we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to talk about meetings, how to have effective meetings so that your team is inspired and they look forward to the meetings. Are they effective in your practice? And then at the very last session, we're going to talk about disciplining your team members, confronting them, holding them accountable for their performance. When things aren't going well, what do? You don't sweep things under the rug like many practices I consult and let things blow up. So we're going to talk about that at the very end of the day. So let's get started recruiting the right people every time. So what I want to talk to you about for the next 45 minutes or so is I want you to understand the importance of hiring for attitude. And also I want you to learn how to recruit staff effectively. And then I'm going to give you some basic tools to help you prevent hiring unqualified candidates. So who do you target as potential employees in your practice? Who do you target? What types of people do you look at when you are thinking about hiring a client care specialist or a veterinary assistant or a kennel assistant? What types of people do you look for? Someone that's friendly? Okay. What about students? Do you hire students? What happens when you hire students? I mean, that can potentially be a good thing. They leave. Absolutely they leave. And I go into so many practices. I consult practices all over the country. And many times I see we've got students working in the veterinary practice, and it's extremely difficult when we as a team create a vision and we roll out this 12 to 24 month action plan and we talk about leveraging the healthcare team and empowering them. And I see these young students that are typically using this position as a stepping stone to move on to something else. Yes. She asked, what about veterinary technician students or people that are aspiring to be in the veterinary profession? Absolutely. I think those are great people that we need to target. However, when I see people that are going to, you know, possibly become a CPA or they're going into a completely different profession, I ask myself to the client, why are we hiring these folks? Why are we hiring people who, number one, aren't going to be here long term? So we automatically are shooting ourselves in the foot by looking for candidates who are going to use this as a temporary role and they're going to move on to something else. I think if we want to have a strong team in place, when we look at candidates, we need to look for people who are going to see this position as a career and not just as a job. And there are people out there who want to work in veterinary practice, who are wanting to work for a fair wage. But when you start looking at people and recruiting people for your team, think about, is this going to be a long-term member of my team that I'm going to dedicate time and attention to and get them trained? Because when you think about the training process, how long do you think it takes to train someone who perhaps has no veterinary industry experience to get into your practice? They know how we do it. They understand the basic elements of customer service. They understand the basic elements of wellness and preventative health care in a veterinary practice. What's the training time? What do you guys think? I'd say 6 months, 6 to 9 months. And then they leave a year later. You're just constantly perpetuating a wheel of frustration for you as managers and as leaders looking for people who potentially are not going to be there long term. You need to think about that. So is the healthcare team an asset or a liability? Employee costs are one of the highest expenses on your financial statement. Are they an asset or are they a liability? I think the healthcare team is a huge asset. Now, one of the things that Kirsty told you earlier is that when I first came into the veterinary profession, I managed a practice, my father's practice, actually. And he's about 62 years old. He's been practicing for over 30 years. And when I came on board with him, his mentality was that employees were liabilities. And so if a warm body was better than nobody was his mentality. You know, let's pay them as little as we can because they're going to quit in 6 months anyway. And so we just, you know, anybody who came in and applied for the job, we hired them. That was the mentality. And I don't believe that works. I don't think if you're going to have a successful practice and you really want to empower and leverage your healthcare team, you've got to be selective, really selective. It doesn't matter how desperate you are. You need to be selective in who you hire. Your healthcare team can be a huge asset if you really utilize them the way they need to be utilized in practice. So let's talk about what employees want versus what employers want. Here's what employers want. They want communication and people skills from their team and their employees. They want someone who has a positive attitude, that's reliable, dependable, and has a good work ethic. They want someone who's honest, who has experience and skills. They want someone that is motivated and is willing to learn new things and is ambitious. So that's the employer list. It's not a real long list. Now let me go over the employee list. It's much longer. Employees want fair compensation and benefits. They want flexibility, fairness in the workload, and expectations. They want understanding of outside commitments. They want a safe, comfortable, compatible work environment, trust, respect, appreciation, recognition, interesting, challenging assignments, willingness to delegate authority. They want educational opportunities, quality medicine and surgery. They want a progressive practice. They want cooperation. They want the realization that people make mistakes. They want a fair, ethical employer, open-mindedness. They want a well-run practice. They want a mature staff, and they want an employer who stands up for their employees. So what's interesting is that there's a much longer list of what employees want, and every employee is different. What pushes their button with regard to satisfaction and motivation. And compensation is very high in the employee list, but total quality of life and work environment issues vastly outweighs compensation. So it's many times we think as employers, well, we can't find the good people because we can't pay them what they want. And I can tell you from my own experience of doing recruiting as a practice manager and also as a practice consultant that that is not the case. I have found high caliber candidates who are willing to get paid a fair wage and not make what the corporate America out there is paying because maybe they want a different work-life balance. Maybe they're tired of that corporate world and they're willing to come in and be in a small family environment and do something that's fun, that they really enjoy, and take less money for it. Because I've found many, many people like that. So it's not about high compensation that's going to allow you to find the great people. Now here's a very cynical employer's view. An employee wants a free ride, a big salary, a lot of benefits, a vacation, free vet care for all their pets, all their family and friends' pets, plus they want to save the world, and they want easy access to cash and drugs. Are any of you like that? have that mentality or have a boss that has that mentality? And I think many times veterinarians get to a point of burnout. You know, they work very hard to keep their employees happy, and they feel like they're doing all the things that they need to do to be a fair employer, and then they end up getting burned. And so it's easy for veterinarians to become cynical at times. Kenneth Blanchard, who wrote The One-Minute Manager. How many of you have read The One-Minute Manager? Okay, about a fourth of you, a third of you. Those of you who did not raise your hand, go out when you get back to your practice and buy that book. It's a real quick read. The One-Minute Manager is an excellent book in equipping you to become a more effective manager. There's another one that's an excellent book regarding delegating. If you have trouble delegating or you feel like you are constantly solving everybody's problems, you need to go out and buy The One-Minute Manager Meets the Monkey. It's an excellent quick read, and it talks about how to delegate to the people who are constantly coming to you to solve their problems. But anyway, Kenneth Blanchard, he did a survey regarding what do employers think and what do employees think, and they surveyed 10,000 employees about job satisfaction, and they also surveyed managers and supervisors as to what they thought made employees satisfied. It was a very interesting survey. So here were the items that made employees most satisfied. The number one thing that made employees satisfied was feeling appreciated for the work they've done by their employer. The second most important thing to employees in order to feel satisfied is they want to feel like they're in on things. They want lots of communication given to them. They want to be involved in the process of being in on the things that are going on in the practice. And the third is help with personal problems. The fourth most important is job security. The fifth most important is high salaries and wages. The sixth most important is interesting work. The seventh is promotion in the company. The eighth is personal loyalty of the supervisor. Ninth is good working conditions. And, of course, the last one is tactful discipline. Now, when you stack these up beside what employers think makes employees satisfied, what's extremely interesting is that the top three that employees think are most important is the employer listed those as the bottom three. So there's a huge disconnect in what employers think employees want. So employers ranked appreciation of work done as eighth on the list, feeling of being in on things as tenth on the list, and help with personal problems is ninth. It was very, very interesting. And here's the rest of the scores. Here's the common mentality of the veterinary profession that I see at times. Not all practices, but Mike Best, the president and CEO of MJ Designs, he said, if the person came in, filled an application, we basically hired them unless they were followed by a policeman. I think we just get so desperate sometimes. You know, we've got those holes that we need to fill, and, you know, we've got team members that are screaming because they need help. When I go into practices and consult, I do confidential interviews, and many times I hear we're short-staffed, we're understaffed, we're stressed out because we don't have enough people on the floor in the workflow doing the work. And so as managers, you know, you are racing to find that person, and so if anybody walks in and looks decent, you're like, come on in. You have the job. Let's talk about why interviews fail. I think interviews fail many times because the veterinarian and the manager do not know the job. We don't understand our culture in our practice. We don't get enough information about the applicant. We don't probe the applicant. We focus only on skills. If they have experience in the veterinary industry, oh, come on, you're hired. And we don't look at personality traits. We don't look at their attitude. We don't look at the longevity in their previous job history. And we don't remember information after the interview. I think many times when I go into practices and I ask them, you need to hire more people or you need to hire different types of people in practice, I hear over and over and over, there are no people out there. There are no good people out there. I can't find anybody to come and work in my practice. And so my first question to those practices is, well, how are you going about recruiting? How do you find the people? And this is where we have a disconnect. I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and so this has worked for me in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I've recommended this in practices that I've consulted. How many of you have advertised in the newspaper, for example? Okay, pretty much all of you. And would you say that, how many of you would say receptionist sometimes is the one you're filling a lot of the time? Okay, some of you. What are the other ones you're having? Kennel staff? Okay, what else? Is that it? Technicians. Yeah. And I think licensed veterinary technicians are hard to come by. Would everyone agree with that? They are. And so we have to fill that gap until we can get more and more people entering into veterinary technician school and becoming licensed technicians. We've got to fill that gap with who we hire now. So let's say we run a classified ad and we word it like this. Help wanted, apply within at ABC Veterinary Hospital at 123 Main Street. What kind of people are we going to find if we run it like that? Anybody and everybody. Now, if I was to recruit a receptionist, and I worded it like this, administrative assistant in bold, full-time position with a busy veterinary practice in Highland Park, experience a plus, but will train a customer service energetic person, excellent compensation, email resume to tdowdy@mrgconsult.com. Now, there's several things about this ad. It's short and sweet because you don't want to spend a tremendous amount of money on a classified ad. But what I have found, when you just change the title from receptionist to administrative assistant, you get a completely different caliber of person. Because many people from other industries, when they hear the word receptionist, they automatically think, I'm a switchboard operator. I'm going to answer phones and transfer calls and take messages. That's what a receptionist does. They sit at a desk and they check people in and they transfer calls. But in a veterinary practice, a receptionist is really a very administrative role. It's very detail-oriented. They need good clerical skills. They need to know how to organize. They need to know how to multitask. And so just by changing the title of the position, you're going to have a different caliber of person apply for this position. Now, in my experience, I'll get 50, 60, 70 resumes from this one ad, and if I just run it on a Sunday. Now, most major cities, whenever you run an ad in classifieds, they'll automatically put it online for you, like at careerbuilder.com or monster.com. And so there's some benefit of, you know, running it in the paper, but also it'll go on the internet as well. But the other thing is, this is an anonymous ad. Your phone number is not listed. The name of your hospital is not listed. Because I don't want to flood my reception desk with phone calls. And I don't want my receptionist to be in charge of the recruiting process that I'm going to be handling as a practice manager. I want to be in control of the people that are calling in or applying for this position. And furthermore, if they're not professional enough to have a resume and have access to fax or email, I don't even want to consider them for a position in my practice. So they need to be professional enough to have a resume and be able to have access to fax or email. I think this is a great ad also for a veterinary assistant as well. Now, kennel assistant, I've listed some ads here, and I'm going to leave this up for a few minutes just so you guys can look at the wording. So veterinary assistant, it would be the same thing. Full-time veterinary assistant position with a busy, progressive, well-equipped practice. And you want to list the town that you're located in. I don't know about you, but I've found that when I don't put the actual town where it's located, I might have someone that's an hour away. And I've found that ends up, I get burned when I do that. Because they'll say, oh, I don't mind the commute. It's not a problem. And then you hire them, and then 6 months later, I can't take this drive anymore. It's just, it's crazy. I can't do it anymore. It's more than I can handle. I don't make enough money, or the gasoline is taking up all my salary, or, you know, whatever. So I try to not hire folks who live really far away, unless you're in a rural area and there's just no people in your area. Now, kennel attendant, I might consider giving them an address or a phone number, because, you know, typically that is a much more entry-level position in your practice. But if you're hiring for a client care specialist, a veterinary assistant, or a technician, I would make it an anonymous ad where they have, you know, where you're in control of who you contact. You're not flooded with a bunch of phone calls and inquiries. You're in charge of screening the candidates. If you get 50 resumes, you're not having 50 people contact you. Now, before I move on, does anyone have any other suggestions that they've used that have been helpful? How many of you have? Yes. Pardon me? Okay, can you say that at one?
Craigslist.
Craigslist is a really good internet site. Craigslist. Okay. Here's also some internet sites that might be able to help you. And what I just showed you before are classified ads. The problem with classified ads is you have to be short and sweet in your verbiage or you're going to spend a lot of money. With internet posting, you can be more verbose in what you want to explain about your practice and really be aggressive in talking up your practice and what you have available for potential candidates. And this might be a good way to find licensed veterinary technicians or folks who have excellent skills and attitude, but maybe they're not happy in the practice that they're currently working in and they're ready to move on to another hospital where they're going to thrive and be successful. So you've got monster.com, careerbuilder.com, animalhealthjobs.com, dvmsearch.com, petsandvets.com, veterinarylife.com, vetclassifieds.com, and AdvantageStarsWebSupport.com/careers. So those are just a few that I listed here. But here's a internet posting that you could, just to kind of give you guys an idea of how you can really, like I said earlier, licensed veterinary technicians are hard to come by, so we have to be aggressive in going out and recruiting these folks. So let me just read to you a potential job posting that you could use on all of those websites I just listed before. Advanced Animal Care Center is a veterinary hospital with an awesome staff and highly respected and loved doctors with a focus on the special relationship created by people and pets. We are currently recruiting for a highly skilled veterinary technician in our very busy veterinary hospital. As an experienced technician, you are key to our client patient center practice. You will utilize your in-depth medical knowledge and your highly developed organizational skills to manage and direct the client-patient flow in the hospital. Your excellent written and verbal communication skills will serve as a focal point for communicating with and educating our pet owners regarding the health and care-related issues by phone and in person, and providing recommendations to pet owners regarding the optimal care of their pets. You will oversee and maintain medical records, incorporating your attention to detail. Using your in-depth knowledge of veterinary medicine, you will assist our veterinarians in diagnosing and treating pets, monitoring anesthesia, performing lab work, monitoring critically ill pets. Advanced Animal Care Center has endoscopy, ultrasound, telemedicine, laser surgery, microprocessor surgery, and pulse oximetry. Above all, you will appreciate the love that owners have for their pets. If you love pets, have excellent medical skills, are able to cheerfully and competently organize and prioritize the many requirements of a busy, fast-paced, deadline-driven hospital environment, pay attention to detail, and are able to visualize the big picture, we have an opportunity for you. Advanced Animal Care Center is an awesome company to work with. For additional information, please visit us at www.abcvet.com. So that's one way that you can really go out there and be aggressive in being competitive and finding some excellent candidates all over the country. So those are just some ideas regarding how to go about finding the people. Yes. question was, she has a lot of, you know, they have in the ad that it's licensed veterinary technician, but they have many people that have no experience in the veterinary industry that apply for this position. And I think that's a tough issue, because I think we need experienced, licensed veterinary technicians, and I'm not convinced there's enough supply for the demand that we have in veterinary practices. There's a problem. Then again, maybe there's a, you know, personally, I think that if you have an awesome training program in place in your practice, perhaps you can hire somebody who's got excellent work history, excellent attitude. Right. She said we have a policy where certain procedures can only be performed by a licensed veterinary technician. And that's a tough one. Absolutely, yes. Right. She said we put in the ad licensing and certification required. All right, so let's look at the components of the job. We have organizational chart, job description, candidate requirements, and organizational culture. How many of you actually have an organizational chart in your practice with specific job titles in your practice? Okay, most of you. And I think it's good to actually have a chart graphed out so that when you bring people into your practice, they know who the chain of command, how the chain of command works in your practice. I hear many times when I interview employees, they say to me, I don't know who my boss is. I don't know who I'm supposed to go to, who I'm actually supposed to report to. And so I think it's good when we bring in new employees that they understand what their job title is, what their roles and responsibilities are, and who they're supposed to report to in the practice. The second thing is we need to have job descriptions, written job descriptions that you can actually give to the candidate when they come in for the interview. How many of you have written job descriptions in your practice? Okay. The majority of you do. Those of you who do not have written job descriptions, I highly recommend that you have them. AHA has some wonderful tools that you can utilize where you can get templates for job descriptions and fine-tune them for your practice's culture and needs and roles and responsibilities. But how many of you actually give the job description to the candidates when you interview them? Okay, about a fourth of you. I highly recommend that you do that so there's a clear understanding with this candidate and you what the job entails, what the roles and responsibilities are. I think regarding legal issues, if you list how much weight they have to lift, be able to lift, that they need to be able to be available during your hours of operation. So if they come to you 6 months down the road and say, I can't work those hours anymore, then you can pull out the job description and say, well, I presented this to you, and the job description clearly states that you are willing to work all the hours of operation of our hospital. So it improves these issues that, you know, if you do have to terminate, you have some documentation regarding what they agreed to when they were hired for the position. Yes. She asked if you should have them initial and sign off. Absolutely. I would have an extra, the day you hire them, you give them a copy of that job description and have them sign it saying that they understand that this is their roles and responsibilities in their position. I think it's also important that you have some type of message in the job description that states that these are their primary roles and responsibilities, but they will be asked to do other things in the practice that are not within their job description. But that's just part of being, you know, in the practice and working together as a team. They may be asked to do other things in the hospital on an as-needed basis. All right, so let's talk about getting information from the candidate. I've got a 5-step process, and we're going to go through these. Step 1 is review the resume and job application. Step 2 is phone screening. Step 3 is schedule and conduct the interview. Step 4 is check references. And step 5 is the working interview with the staff. And I'm going to go over each one of these with you. Step 1, what should you look for in a resume and application? Typos, grammar, spelling, handwriting.
gaps in employment, frequent moves. I'm a firm believer that if the resume is consistently, they stay in their position 2 years or less, I'm not even going to consider them. So if I get 50 or 70 resumes, I'm going to probably whittle that down to about 12 people just by their job history. If they have not, if they don't stay in their job longer than 2 years, I'm not interested in talking to them, typically. There may be occasional times when I may see someone that maybe has worked, that may have veterinary industry experience, but I'm really going to screen them pretty heavily on the phone to identify why they left so often in these practices. But typically, if they are job hoppers in other industries, or they're probably going to be a job hopper with you too. So I want someone who's got good, consistent, stable job history. Lack of peer career progression, job objectives. I'm definitely going to hire someone who has had formal client service training, who maybe has been in a corporate environment, because I want professional people to surround the veterinarians in the practice. People that know how to be professional, know how to provide good client service, know how to communicate with the public. And so I'm going to be looking for those types of candidates. Not somebody who's never worked on a computer, who's never dealt with the public. Those types of things. Who hasn't been in an office environment, possibly. Skills that matched the job requirements, lack of accomplishments, grades, and professional affiliations. So once I take a look at the resume, this is going to be done before they actually come into the practice, because this is going to be via email or fax. So I'm going to be looking at the resume and identifying their job history, their stability in their jobs, what types of work they've done, do they live fairly close to the practice, and then I'm going to narrow that down. Maybe if I've got 50 resumes, for example, I'm probably going to narrow that down to 12 to 15 resumes. And I'm going to make a phone call, which is step two. Yes. She said, what about students that just graduated from college or high school? She said, if it's a vet student that has just graduated from vet school, or a technician that's just graduated from tech school, or even someone who has their bachelor's degree, I'm interested in those folks. If they see this as a career opportunity, I am very interested in someone who has their college degree that's looking for a long-term career in the veterinary profession. So I would definitely look at that resume and put that in the yes pile. And then I'm going to call them. And I'm going to ask several questions. So when I get on the phone with this person, I'm going to say, hi, I'm Tracy with Advanced Animal Care Center, and I got your resume, and I'm interested in potentially interviewing you for the position that you applied for. But before we schedule an interview, Susie, I would like to ask you a few questions and make sure that this is a position that you are interested in interviewing for and you qualify for coming in for an interview. So the first question I have for you, Susie, is why did you apply for this position? So I listen. And if it's, you know, then there's a lot of different reasons. I mean, I know of a woman who had her MBA, who'd worked for W.W. Grainger for 8 years as their branch manager. She'd been traveling to Chicago Monday through Friday. She was making $75,000 a year. And I said, why did you apply for the receptionist position? And she said, I am tired of the corporate rat race. I'm tired of not having a personal life. I get on a plane every Monday morning, and I come home Friday night exhausted, and I don't have work-life balance. And I've gone up the corporate ladder, and I don't need that anymore to feel fulfilled in my life. I want to do something that I can enjoy, and that I can come to work every day and give 100%, but then when I go home, it's my time. It's my family's time. And I can enjoy my life outside of work. Well, that was a good answer for me. I said, okay. So why did you leave your last position, or why do you want to leave? And I'm listening for the answer. Yes. Did everyone hear that? And that's a good point. I think that, and that's where you have to screen and you have to ask the right questions, because I think that there's a difference between getting up and coming to work and working hard. You know, running around, being somewhat in a stressful environment, having to show grace under pressure, you're multitasking, you're dealing with the public, you're dealing with barking dogs and upset clients, and then going home and being done. And I think that sometimes when you're in a high-level position, maybe in corporate America, you take that work home with you constantly. You're working wee hours of in the night, talking to clients, talking to your coworkers, working on reports, and you're not able to ever stop. And so I think you really have to identify, well, what do you mean when you say, you know, you're tired of working so hard? Define that. Explain to me what that really means to you. Because I think it may mean different things to different people. You certainly do not want someone who wants to just sit in a chair at a desk and coast for an eight-hour shift. We certainly don't want that in our practice. And so I think that you have to probe and ask the right questions. The third question is, what are your minimum salary requirements? I mean, if this person wants $50,000 a year to be a client care specialist, it's not going to fly. I mean, we just can't afford that. But if they're within, you know, $10 to $13 an hour or, you know, something like that, then we are going to consider them. And then inform the candidate of your compensation and benefits, what you have available, and ask them if that is something that they're willing to consider. And then inform the candidate about the position, what it requires, the skills necessary for the position. So, Susie, what I'm looking for let's say I listed it as administrative assistant. Right there, I'm going to clarify. Actually, I listed it as administrative assistant, but in our practice, the title is client care specialist. And this person works in our practice, and they are the first person our client meets and the last person our client sees at the exit of their visit. This is probably one of the most important positions in our veterinary practice. And we need someone who enjoys developing relationships with pet owners. We need someone who enjoys talking to people, relating to people. This position is very detail-oriented. You need to be organized. You need to be able to multitask. But more importantly, it's about developing relationships with people. And so if you enjoy talking to people and interacting with people, this will be a good job for you. Does this sound like something you would be interested in doing, Susie? And then inform the candidate of the hours of operation and potential schedule. Now, I'm going to listen for a good phone voice. Does this person do they speak eloquently? Are they polite and courteous on the phone? Do they have good grammar when they communicate? And I'm also listening for red flags. You know, if the person starts telling me, well, I'm leaving because I have a personality conflict with my boss. We just do not get along at all. Well, that's a red flag for me because, number one, I think that's something that's very unprofessional to say to a potential employer, even if it is the truth. And number two, I'm just going to feel a little nervous about the fact that this person doesn't get along with everybody. Those are the kinds of people I want to hire, people who get along with everybody, regardless of whether they have a personality conflict or not. They get along with everybody. They know how to interact with people in a professional way. Well, I'm right in the middle of a divorce. My life is a wreck. You know, I can't drive because my car broke down. And, you know, whatever. You know, when people just start spilling their guts about their personal life, again, I think that's an unprofessional thing to say to a potential employer, and I'm not interested in interviewing them. So when that happens, what do you say to the person on the phone to get them off? That's something everyone asks me. What do you say? What I say is, well, Susie, thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me. I've got about 10 more people that I'm going to be contacting, and I'm going to narrow it down to 5 candidates that I'm going to bring in for interviews. If you do not hear from me by tomorrow afternoon, then you were not chosen for the next step of to come in for an interview. I appreciate your time, and good luck. So I leave it open-ended like that. So, because, you know, I'm not going to have them come back. And so I'm not going to waste my time and energy interviewing someone just out of courtesy because I don't know how to, you know, get them off the hook now that I've contacted them. So step 3 is the interview. So you want them to come in. So once they come into the practice, they absolutely need to fill out an application. Okay? They need to fill out an application because there's some, you know, their disclaimer at the bottom where they have to sign saying that everything they said is true to the best of their ability, and you will have that in the employee file for, you know, in case you need it in the future for legal issues. So you definitely need to fill out an application. So here are the interview components. There's the introduction, questions, company information, candidate questions, selling, and next steps. So the first thing I do when the candidate comes in is I introduce them to the practice. Susie, let me tell you a little bit about our practice. We've been in existence for 25 years. I talked to them about the doctors, where they went to school, what type of services we provide in the practice, what our vision and core values are about, what we deem important with our healthcare team, how we utilize our healthcare team, the fact we have weekly meetings with our team. I explain the position. I hand them the job description. I explain to them why we're interviewing for the position. And then I say, now, Susie, what I'd like to do is ask you some questions. I'm going to ask you some questions about your previous job history, and then I have some standardized questions that I'm going to ask you, and I'm asking of all the candidates that I interview for this position. So I go over job history. So tell me about your current position. What do you do for them? What does a typical day look like for you? And I just, you know, you should be doing 20% of the talking, and the candidate should be doing 80% of the talking. What is your goal? Is to identify situations in the candidate's past that are similar to circumstances they encounter in your clinic and see how they react to them. How many of you do behavioral or situational interviewing? Okay, just a few of you. That's where you say, you give them a situation and you say, tell me about a time in your past employment where you had an upset client. Tell me about that situation and how you handled that. So it really delves into more of their, you know, how they handle stress, their personality, their interpersonal skills, and those types of things. And determine if those reactions are what you need in your position. You want to ask open-ended questions. Look for patterns. Don't give away the answer you want. Don't ask sneaky, trick, or loaded questions, and don't be hostile, skeptical, or impatient. Now, here are some examples of some standardized. How many of you ask standardized questions of all candidates? Okay, about a third of you. This is really important because if you ask standardized questions versus just ad-libbing every interview, you're going to be able to score your candidates more effectively. So here are some questions that are just great for you to ask. Susie, imagine we hired you. What would you be told on your first performance appraisal? This is just to determine how self-confident she is. How much does she believe in herself? What qualities do you feel are important to be successful in this position? Now, you've already given her an overview of the position, so now let's hear her repeat that back and see if she can explain it as well as you explained it to him or her. What is it you seek in a job? Give an example of something you didn't like in your previous job. Give an example of a problem you solved in a unique way. What kind of work environment is best for you? What is your definition of professionalism? What are 3 adjectives that describe you? What is your weakest attribute? How would you describe yourself as a communicator, and how do you like to be managed? One of the things you need to make sure that you focus on in the interviews is asking job-related questions only. You want to make sure that you do not discriminate against their sex, their race, their religion, sexual orientation. So you want to ask job-related questions only. So you don't say, so are you married? Or how many children do you have? What do you like to do on your free time? So you need to be very careful when you ask questions that they are focused predominantly on the job. You need to ask the same questions of all candidates. So once you've gone through those questions and you've made notes, now you ask the candidate, now do you have any questions for me, Susie? Is there anything that I can answer for you regarding this position? And you give them the opportunity to ask you questions. And then lastly, this is a buyer's market, especially if it's a licensed veterinary technician. So you want to talk up your practice. What makes your practice unique? What are the things that make you stay at this practice, that create longevity in your healthcare team? So tell them the things that make your practice wonderful, but be honest, be realistic. So that person who had the MBA, for example, who'd worked for that corporate company for 8 years, here's some of the things I said to her when I interviewed her. I said, now, Amy, let me ask you a question. I said, you're highly educated. You want to work at the front office with our client care specialist. How do you feel about working with a team of people who've been in their position for 3 or 4 years and they're a little bit younger than you? And they may not have the skill sets that you have, but yet they think they know more than you know. How would you feel working in that type of environment? So I made it very clear. I mean, I painted a realistic picture for her that she was going to come into a position with a lot of knowledge and a lot of skills, and she was going to be working with folks who did not have that same type of knowledge and skills that she had. And she gave an excellent answer. She said, you know, I have worked with all different types of people in the environment that I worked in, and I'm able to flex my personality style, and it doesn't matter how much schooling they had, I'm sure there are some things I can learn from them. It was an excellent answer. But you do need to be realistic. You know, let's say it's a kennel assistant. You need to make it clear, are you willing to work every single weekend and every single holiday? Are you going to be available to come in and work after hours just on the spot when we need you? So you need to be realistic with them and let them know what we have to offer. And then give them a recruiting packet. Let them know what your vision and core values are. And then lastly, check references. Actually, I've got two more steps. Check references. I know this is a difficult thing because many companies will not give you the information, but I am a firm believer. I tell the candidate, if I cannot get a legitimate reference, then you're not going to be considered for this position. So I need to talk to somebody in that organization that can give me some type of information about your position. I need to speak to a supervisor, some supervisor that you were under in that business, because I need to know, I need to get some type of information other than the dates you were hired and left in your title. And then lastly, I highly recommend working interviews where your staff have an opportunity to meet this candidate, because they're the ones that are going to be working with this employee, not you typically. If you're the practice manager or the practice owner, you may not be working with this person intimately. And so in order for them to fit into your culture and fit in with the chemistry of your healthcare team, let them be involved in the process of interviewing. Now, you need to train your team to not ask discriminating questions during that working interview, so you need to be cautious of that. But give them an opportunity to come in. You do need to pay that employee. They can't come in as a volunteer. They need to be paid. The labor board will not allow it to be a volunteer at times, so you do need to pay them. And you can do like contract labor type of thing if you don't end up not hiring them. And then once the team says, absolutely, this person's great, we think they would be an asset to our team, then you need to make them a formal offer. And I recommend doing this in writing. You can do it verbally on the telephone, but then when they come in, you have it typed up in writing and you have them sign it. So it's in their personnel file. But here are the items you need to discuss. Offer the position, tell them the salary and the benefits, their schedule and start date, what they need to wear on their first day, and ask them to obviously bring the necessary documentation to fill out their I-9 form and their W-2 form for their taxes. Yes?
I thought legally,
Thank you. Appreciate that. She said, you can't say specifically bring in your driver's license and social security card. You need to say, you need to bring in two forms of ID, of identification. So I wasn't aware of that, so thank you. Appreciate you saying that. All right, I'm sorry I had to kind of breeze through those last points. Questions? Yes. What rate do you pay them at when you do a working interview? Right. I would pay them within that range of what you're planning to pay for that position. You know, if you wanted to do a minimum wage, I would ask them if they're willing to do that. Do a minimum wage rate to come in for those 4 hours for the working interview. Yes. They fall under workman's comp anyway. Anytime you have volunteers come into your practice or anyone in your practice, they would fall under workman's comp if they're volunteering. So they would fall under that category. Otherwise, it would be under your liability insurance if they were to be injured. Yes? No. Staff turnover rate? He said, when I was a practice manager, what was my staff turnover rate? I would say the employees, when I managed, their, on average, I would say is 3 to 5 years. Oh, yes. She said, if you're opening up a new practice, you can't really do a working interview. How is there a way that you could bring them all together? That's a very good question. Does anyone else have any suggestions? Yes. What? Have a job fair? I think a job fair was an excellent idea. Excellent. Excellent. Well, I believe we're out of time, Kirstie. So thank you all so much, and I hope you come back for the next session where we can talk about orientation.